From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Have you seen headlines in your Facebook feed or at the bottom of an article that read, Hillary Clinton meets Osama bin Laden with a picture of the two shaking hands, or President Obama's daughter Malia is pregnant, or the process to impeach Donald Trump has begun? Just to be clear, all of those stories are false. Hillary Clinton's picture was photoshopped, Malia's teen pregnancy, and Donald Trump's impeachment are both patently false. It's fake news. But the term fake news is also used to invalidate legitimate news stories, differentiate opinion from news, and, of course, separate fiction from fact. Despite its apparent simplicity, there's nothing simple about the phenomenon, which also reflects the rapidly changing media landscape. According to a new survey by Pew Research Center, 64% of American adults say fabricated news stories cause a great deal of confusion about the basic facts of current issues and events. This feeling cuts across incomes, education levels, partisan affiliations, and most other demographics. But there are ways that you can learn to spot fake news and become a more educated news consumer. Joining us today to help navigate how editorial decisions are made and how to sort out real news from the fake stuff, John Evans co-anchors WECT News at 5:30, 6, and 11, as well as Fox Wilmington News at 10. He leads the political coverage for both stations and was recently named the assistant news director. Also, among many other awards, he is a three-time Anchor of the Year winner by the Radio Television Digital News Association of the Carolinas. John Evans, welcome to Coastline.
Always good to be here, Rachel. Thanks.
David Purnell lectures at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, in the Department of Communication Studies, where he teaches journalism. Dave Purnell, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you think you can tell the difference between a legit story and a phony? What questions do you have about fake news? Give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Both of you have a deep background in broadcast news. John Evans, how has the news landscape changed over the years? And when did you notice the proliferation of fake news having an impact?
To me, it really started more with when social media started to become more prominent in the media landscape. That's often where you see, at least I see, many of these stories popping up. I don't think they pop up on the legitimate news organizations, the NPRs, the networks. I think you see them at the bottom of your Facebook feeds, as you said. I think you see them at the bottom of a web page. When you see a picture of a 70s TV star and say you won't believe what they look like now. Or you see some of these social media sites that are, frankly, they're looking for clicks and they're looking for eyeballs. That's the key, as we talked before, is people have to become educated in how to spot these fake sites and these sites that are, out there just trying to get you to click on it, not necessarily trying to educate in a responsible way.
Dave Purnell from UNCW, how does that change what the news consumer needs to understand?
Well, they just need to understand what they're looking at. I mean, John hit the nail right on the head. It all comes back to us as consumers being responsible for the quote-unquote media, which is a very blanket term, but the news information that we are consuming. That's one of the cornerstones that we teach in our department at UNCW is media literacy. It's the ability to access, evaluate, and analyze what you're consuming on a critical level so that when you do see that picture of the 1970s TV star, it's amazing what they look like now, you know immediately that that is garbage. When you see some of the headlines that you read at the top of the show, it should, inherently raise a red flag to say that doesn't sound right. And if it doesn't sound right, then, read the article if you're curious, but then try to find another article that backs that up, that substantiates that. And that's the part, that's the responsibility that we have as media consumers in the 21st century. And to be honest, it's easier now than it ever was before because there is the internet. There are so many different places to go to validate information that you're reading online.
So when we hear the term fake news, what are we talking about, John Evans? What is fake news?
Fake news to me, and I've been asked this question in several venues, fake news to me is the intentional misleading of a viewer, a reader, a listener, trying to do it intentionally. I think that that's the difference between legitimate journalism or legitimate entertainment, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call it, and intentionally trying to mislead. That's where it crosses over to me as being fake news.
But the term gets bandied about so
yes.
much, and, mm-hmm. and you hear it in other ways. How is it affecting you?
Well, you know, and to what David said is that, you know, and I started off a talk to a group at UNCW last week saying, you know, how many people in here have never made a mistake? And then how many people believe that journalists and reporters are not human? We all make mistakes. But the difference is that, you know, I know if I pop a word or if I misstate that the meeting is going to be March 6th instead of the 16th, or somebody in the newsroom misstates something and puts it down. And a mistake is a mistake. You correct it. You move on. It's not intentional. And I think now we have people. There was an example I used last night of somebody who's one of our folks just made a mistake and misspoke, and an email came in saying, you know, where did that information come from? It's fake news. And it's like, well, no, it's not. It's a mistake, and we apologize and we correct it.
And in this particular case, the detail that was the mistake wasn't even something that was particularly central
right.
to the
no,
story.
No, it wasn't. It was whether we said that the Wilmington Fire Department had been out at the scene of the propane leak last night for most of the day versus most of the afternoon. How long they were out there really isn't central to the story. The central thing to the story is nobody was hurt. They were burning off the propane. They didn't have to evacuate people. That's what the story is. And somebody made a mistake and said day instead of afternoon. But the email we got was critical that, oh, that's fake news. You're trying to mislead the public. Well, sorry, we made a mistake. We apologize. Please forgive us.
How does live news or breaking news, Dave Purnell, differ from a story that a reporter, say, has covered during the day and has turned for the evening newscast? What are the differences in the process?
Well, I mean, obviously, oftentimes during breaking news, it's unscripted, or you might have bullet points and you're going off facts as they're coming in, and you have to constantly update those facts. And facts can sometimes change because you're getting your information maybe from law enforcement or from emergency personnel, and they don't have all the facts. So you are simply reporting what you get from them, and then as they get more information, you get more information. It really goes down to what is the story about, because if it's in a situation where there is a public risk, a public danger, maybe a propane leak or a shooter has been spotted on campus, that's kind of timely in a way, right? But if something like that happens, you have to evaluate as a reporter, as the news director, as the executive producer, what information do you go with? If you're getting information, say, for example, from social media and someone is tweeting that they saw the gunman at a certain location, you have to evaluate, okay, do we go with this even though we haven't substantiated with law enforcement as a way of serving the public because that person may be there armed and dangerous, or do we wait and try to substantiate it, but in that time, something bad may happen, people may get hurt. Those are those kind of judgment calls that you have to make. If it comes to find out where the information was incorrect, then you say that we're sorry, we have a correction to that. And that's one of the biggest differences between legitimate news and fake news is that legitimate news organizations take accountability for the mistakes that they made, and they do correct them and they do apologize for them because they feel responsible to the viewers out there. So it's always a judgment call when you're doing breaking news. I mean, obviously, this area is no stranger to hurricane coverage. I'm sure John Evans has done a lot of that. I did some of that when I used to work in this market. And you're getting information on the fly, and you have to get it out as quickly as possible to keep people safe. And so that's the biggest difference, I think, between those two worlds.
John Evans from WECT, can you tell us about a situation where it was breaking news and it might have been a public safety issue, such as in the middle of a hurricane, mm-hmm. when you saw an update on Twitter? You don't know, you know, it's not coming from an official source. You don't know where it's from, but you have to make the decision as a news person.
Yeah, I mean, bringing an example, a specific example to you right now, I don't know if I can, but, you know, in that breaking news aspect, but even not in the breaking news aspect, we, you know, if you have a story and you have information of a story, the responsible. And I'll give you one example. Recently, there was something that came up about one of our legislators in Raleigh, and we got information and had information regarding the legislator and could have gone with the allegation, could have gone with what we had uncovered. But until you hear and get a comment from the legislator, him or herself, that's the responsible side of bringing the other side of the story to light. And we did, waited till we got a comment and then published it online and then aired it on the air. But to David's example, you know, when you're getting material during a hurricane, it could be something like a road is flooded or the Black River in Pender County has overflowed its banks and there's a river flood warning and you should get out right now. You're going with information. If you get it from the emergency management office, well, you consider them a legitimate source. But if you're getting from somebody who just drove through Highway 210 near Curry and said, the bridge is flooded, we hear reports of the bridge being flooded, but we haven't confirmed that information yet. That's the way to approach something like that. And to put the caveat out there, to tell them we're hearing this, we haven't confirmed it. You're
bringing the viewers into your process.
Right, exactly. You're telling people you're still working to get more information or to get it confirmed. And as soon as we do, we'll get it to you.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're learning about fake news today, what it is, how to spot it, and why it's dangerous. UNCW's David Purnell and WECT's John Evans are with us and answering your questions on this Wednesday. The phone lines are now open. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're exploring the vast and relatively new landscape of fake news and the evolving role of news organizations and the gatekeepers. We'll talk about Facebook and Google during this segment. With us on this Wednesday to answer your questions, WECT's evening news anchor, John Evans, and UNCW's David Purnell. He teaches journalism in the Communication Studies Department. If you have a question for our guests, you can reach us today at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. We have an email from George who says, Hannah Arendt, 1978, in the New York Review of Books, freshly relevant now, the moment we no longer have a free press, anything can happen. What makes it possible for a totalitarian or any other dictatorship to rule is that people are not informed. How can you have an opinion if you are not informed? If everybody always lies to you, the consequence is not that you believe the lies, but rather that nobody believes anything any longer. Dave Purnell, are we sort of re-entering an era when we need to be aware of freedom of the press and protect that right?
I think we've always been in a situation where we need to recognize freedom of the press and to respect that. I really don't think personally that we are at any risk right now of losing the freedom of the press, because you're seeing how the media organizations that are being unfairly accused of fake news, they are responding. They are stepping their game up, and if anything, you know, the positive outcome of all of this may be that those news organizations such as the CNN or New York Times or Wall Street Journal, they're going to make sure that they're more accountable than ever before to say, this is the information that we're getting and this is where we got it from, to show the people and be more transparent in that, to show where that information is coming from, to say, no, we are legitimate, we are presenting factual information, and we are a free and independent press and always will be. So I really don't see us losing that freedom of the press.
If someone takes fake news, this is from Don, and posts it on Facebook, even if it wasn't intentional to post fake news, doesn't that post still constitute fake news? John Evans.
Sounds like a math problem.
It kind of does.
You know, that's the issue with Facebook and with social media is, where is it coming from? You know, who is your source? Where are you getting your information from? I mean, I don't want to veer too far off this highway here, but, you know, The Daily Show. I was a huge fan of Jon Stewart's at The Daily Show. I loved it. But there are too many people who believe that The Daily Show was their only source of information. And the same thing with other shows that may lean right and or left on either side of the political aisle, is that if that is your one sole source for information, then you're going to have a difficult time telling the real from the fake. It's the viewer, reader, listener's responsibility, in my mind, to find out where the material is coming from and be knowledgeable. That's my belief.
And so just to be clear, people like Jon Stewart, John Oliver, late night, parody satirists, these guys, do they have the same ethical guidelines that they follow when it comes to producing their monologues? Is it just slant? Or because this it was recently established, I think it was a Pew Research study, another survey found a higher percentage of Americans got their information about the campaign from late night TV comedy shows. More people got their information from that kind of a source than newspapers. A mere 2% of Americans today turn to newspapers as the most helpful guides for presidential campaigns. So what does that mean? And what are the standards there when you're watching a John Oliver or a John Stewart, Dave Purnell?
It means we're not doing our jobs as responsible consumers. I mean, quite frankly, that shows where we're not holding ourselves accountable to truly looking at all the issues from all the sides. Because I also enjoy a lot of those late night shows, and their job primarily is to entertain, not so much inform. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I want to learn about true issues about the campaign, I'm going to go somewhere to be informed, not entertained. So the challenge is, and as much as I might agree with some of those late night show hosts or disagree with them, whatever the case may be, yes, it does get people talking about the issues, but it doesn't get people talking, having the right conversation about the issues, because you're looking at it through some kind of filter, some kind of slant, because there usually is some satirical point to it, or there is a little bit of a bias to it. One of the things that I always tell my students, especially those who are serious about going into journalism, is you have to get out of your comfort zone. You cannot only read websites or watch television shows that meet your ideology. You've got to force yourself to watch someone who has a different opinion, because you cannot be fully knowledgeable about a situation or an issue going on until you know all sides of that issue and think about it critically and then decide how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. So that all goes back to, yes, it's great to watch The Daily Show. It's great to watch John Oliver, but it's also great to tune on Fox News.
But why are all these Americans turning to these people as their news source? Why is the public eschewing professional news organizations in favor of these guys? John Evans, news organizations need to take a lesson from this?
No, I personally don't think so. I mean, I think, as David said, it's entertainment. It's easy. It's easy to click on Breitbart. It's easy to click on Mother Jones. It's easy to click on HuffPost. It's easy to click on no matter what all these sites are, Politico or Accuracy in Media, whatever you want to call it. It's easy to click once. You have to work to click twice. You have to work even more to click three times. And so the consumer, to me, it's the consumer's responsibility. It's also difficult to read or to go onto the New York Times and read a lengthy investigative report. It's difficult to sit down and watch a 90-minute, sometimes, presidential or gubernatorial debate and hear from the candidates themselves when you can hear whoever the commentator is say what Roy Cooper or Pat McCrory or whoever said. In this day and age, it is immediate. People want it now. And their attention span isn't as long as it used to be when Cronkite and Jennings and Brinkley and everybody else were delivering and people would sit and watch an entire newscast. It's different now than it used to be.
And with that in mind, how does that change editorial decisions when you see a particular story on WECT's website, for instance, mm-hmm. that's getting a lot of clicks? You know, maybe it's a story about a lost dog who rescued a baby from the river. I don't know. And then you've got this upcoming school board mm-hmm. candidate forum mm-hmm. that is about as sexy as, you know, a polar bear in a bikini. I don't know where that came from.
But how do you
navigate that as a news organization? Because you want those clicks too.
Sure. And in our newsroom, we have a monitor showing how many people are clicking on and what stories are the most popular on our website, on our app, and every day. But I think you have to balance that as in the you have to deliver, in my mind, the news of the day, the big stories of the day, where some of those other dog rescues child out of a lake, I think those come in when you've done the major stories of the day and you have, say, and I'll admit, you will do something if we have 30 seconds or a minute in the newscast and we've done the big stories of the day and we're saying, okay, we still have 30 seconds. We have room for two or three more stories. What should we put in here? People are really interested in that story. Let's find a way to tell that story. Let's find a spot in the newscast for it. It's not going to be the lead story.
So it's the dessert.
It's the story that comes in to let people know that we're paying attention to all different sides. The hard news, the stories that aren't so good, but the stories that are good news and will make you feel good about the day. Yeah.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about the burgeoning role of fake news and what the differences are. We'll get into commentary, satire, spin, and flat-out falsehoods. Our guests today, John Evans, evening news anchor at WECT and WSFX. He also leads the political coverage at both stations. And David Purnell, he teaches journalism in the Communication Studies Department at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. They're answering your questions on this Wednesday. Do you have a question about fake news? Are you confused by a report and don't know whether there's truth to it? We'll try to help you out. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or call us today at 910-343-1138. We have Jeff from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Great discussion going on. I was hoping you guys could discuss the term fake news for people that are using it as a reference for anything that they don't believe in themselves. Or that they don't agree with, I guess. Instead of I think a lot of people understand the difference between reading fake news and real news. But when people start showing examples and saying that this is fake news and it's leaning to the other side that they don't believe in, I was hoping you could discuss that.
That's a good question, Jeff. So, John Evans, how have you seen examples of the term fake news being used to just invalidate?
Well, I think that President Trump used some of that in his last news conference. I think you could hear him talk about whether there were good stories and whether there were other stories. Now, again, whether you slant one way or the other, I think you can see that he looks at stories that aren't necessarily in a flattering light to him or his administration and has called them fake news. And that's the part of the media and journalists and this estate that we're in is to keep an eye on where our taxpayer money is spent in our government. So they're presidents have been the topic of investigative reports and those kind of stories for a long time. He just happens to classify them, I believe, the ones that he doesn't like, as fake news.
Dave Purnell, is there a danger in using the term fake news to invalidate work from a legitimate news organization?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my personal opinion is that to hear the president of the United States, and this is not a Donald Trump thing. This is any president. If Barack Obama had done this, if Hillary Clinton had won the election and she was doing this, to hear a president say that someone like CNN is fake news because they don't like the way that organization portrayed them is incredibly irresponsible, because there are millions of people out there who are very strong Trump supporters. They hear that and they take it at face value. They're going to, because that's their candidate, they believe in their president, and when the president makes that accusation, even without anything to substantiate that, they're going to take that at face value and they're going to hold that same opinion. So now you have a situation where all these people are being misinformed about the validity of CNN. I mean, CNN, they sometimes do things that I don't particularly care for. I think sometimes they get a little bit too wrapped up in how they present the news than what news they're presenting. But I've never questioned their integrity. I've never questioned their desire to present information that people need to know. Now that's being completely invalidated. And what you end up happening, and kind of going back to the question that Jeff had, is that people like to use fake news in a way, I think, to validate their own point of view, to say that I feel this way about this issue, and here's this article showing how the opposition is wrong and how this other candidate is wrong, and that helps validate my point of view, because we like to be right. People like to be right. And I don't think it comes from a place of ignorance. I think it comes from just being comfortable in the decisions that you make and using these stories to validate your decisions. I think people just inherently do, not maliciously, just as a way to kind of validate themselves.
But if I can step in, I agree with David. But in this day and age, to me, and I see this and have asked politicians this for the last decade or so, it seems that compromise is a dirty word. And if somebody doesn't believe in the way you believe, well, there's less respect for the other side nowadays, in my mind, than there used to be. And I think that comes from a proliferation of so many different websites and places you can go that basically just vilify anybody that doesn't have the same opinion that they do. It's not just a difference of opinion. You may think one thing, I may think another, but I respect your opinion. And there's not enough of that going on. And that's when I think, to David's point, fake news is then brought in that, no, you don't have your opinion. You believe in fake news, or you're fake news. There's a difference there. And so I think, especially with politics in the last 10 years, is there's compromise in the middle of the road is just a place that not too many people say they want to be, because they're just vilified by people on the outer fringes of either side.
John Evans, do you think when you hear points of view that are different from your own, How do you view those points of view? And the reason I ask this is a leading question, because I happen to think, I mean, you were one of the people who shaped me for good or for ill, I think, when it comes to really listening and challenging oneself all the time. Mm-hmm. So how do you challenge yourself and your own thinking? And has there ever been a time that another point of view has expanded your way of seeing an issue?
Well, sure. I mean, we have to do that in our business. We have to know what the other side is. I have an opinion on everything else like that. I can never let my opinion show. But yeah, I've got one. And if Rachel is coming in or David is coming in for an interview with me, I'll do research on where they stand on the issues. But I also want to know something to be able to ask them to put the conversation out, to see where they stand on the other side. And so I think you always have to be open to the other side. I mean, I think that is where you and I, and what David is trying to teach, is how to ask a good question is to ask it from the other side. And there, then you get into the weeds. Then you're pulling back two or three layers of the onion, and that's when you're getting down into the deeper discussion.
Mm-hmm. Dave Purnell, how do you get your students to challenge their own maybe unconscious biases?
Well, one of the things we talk about, I teach them a media law and ethics course, and one of the very first thing we do before we even get into the legal side of it is we talk about an ethical framework that forces you to think outside of self-interest, because our initial reactions to things instinctually is self-interest. As a journalist, your job is to think about your audience. You are a conduit of information from the experts or from the real events that are happening to the audience to show them what is happening as objectively as possible and why it's important, why they need to care about that school board meeting that's so boring or that county commission meeting that's so boring, because important decisions get made on a weekly basis. So it's very easy to not think about that. So we talk about, and I'll try not to get too far in the weeds on this, but this turns into a lecture all of a sudden. We talk about looking at everyone involved in the decisions that you make as a journalist, because every decision you make impacts the story that you tell and impacts how viewers perceive that story. So we look at yourself. Obviously, you cannot remove yourself from the decisions that you make. So that becomes part of it, and your morals and everything that you bring into it. But then you look at the organization that you work for and your obligation to them to be a responsible journalist, because one bad egg can spoil the bunch. If there's one reporter at WECT, for example, that is engaging in bad news practices, viewers then blanket everyone at WECT as being careless. So you think about that. You think about the people that are supporting you. You think about your peers and everyone that works there. You think about society. And then you think about the object. And the object is the person or thing that's kind of the center of your story, the center of your decision, that has the most at stake and yet the least amount of control about the decision that you make. So say, for example, you're doing a story about a sexual assault victim. You're doing that story. How do you tell that story so that you don't victimize this person a second time or make the story even worse? You have a responsibility to that story. So that's what we kind of think about in this framework that will hopefully just make them step back for just a minute and make a well-reasoned decision.
And we're going to talk more about minimizing harm when we come back from the break and how journalists make decisions about coverage. We also have a few people on the line, and we want to get to those callers in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about the growing presence of fake news and how all of this affects you. When we come back, one more segment to call in with your question on this Wednesday. You can reach us today by email at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're learning about the burgeoning presence of fake news through websites set up to be clickbait, political or lobbying organizations who can bypass traditional news media to get their word out, how all of this affects you. Here to answer your questions on this Wednesday are David Purnell. He teaches journalism at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and John Evans. He's the anchor of WECT's evening newscasts and the 10 o'clock cast on sister station WSFX Fox News. Do you have a question or a comment about fake news? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Paul from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thanks. I had a question for the guest regarding sensational headlines that you see, especially online, where, you know, shorter headlines were talked about so-and-so slamming another person or epic takedown in these headlines, and then you read the article, and it's just like, you know, nothing like these kind of like hyperbole headlines, and how that affects fake news, or how that's added to not believing these stories beneath the headlines.
John Evans.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, these websites and companies, they want that click on the story because they want you to go in and read their story. And, you know, I think as you do this, people have to frame that differently or file that back into the back of their minds that the last time they went to X website, they clicked on a story and it was a big letdown. You know, I think we have to, you know, we have to in our newsroom, we are, you know, conscious all the time of not sensationalizing, of making sure that we don't go out there and blow something out of proportion, because that's been a criticism of the media for a long time, not just when the, you know, the new fake news, you know, has started.
Mary writes, I still use Snopes.com to debunk Facebook posts, kindly, of course. What are the best sites for fact-checking, and is Snopes still credible? Dave Brunell.
Oh, wow. As far as I know, Snopes is still credible. I'll be honest with you. I don't spend a lot of time going around finding websites to debunk other websites, because some of those are fake. And so I typically just stick to legitimate, trusted news sites. And I don't, you know, it's so easy to go on social media and to get into these debates where you're trying to call your Facebook friends out for things that they're posting. And I sometimes think that's just an empty argument, because that's just perpetuating the argument. And John brought up a great point earlier about we do live in a culture where it's not okay to disagree anymore and to be respectful of each other's opinions. If one of my Facebook friends feels better validating their point of view by posting fake news sources, then you know what? That's on them. I can try to say, look, this isn't a legitimate news site, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to fight that battle, because ultimately it's not going to go anywhere. All I would say, and what I'd really stress to my students, is just know where you're going, know what you're looking at, and stick to those sites that you feel are legitimate.
Diminishing returns, but then there are consequences. There was Pizzagate. Remember that? That wasn't that long ago.
Sure.
John Evans, this was a North Carolina man who traveled to Washington, D.C., armed, stormed a pizza restaurant in D.C. And do you remember why?
Well, I don't remember the exact thing, but he read something online about there being a tie-in with the Clinton campaign and having something to do with, I think, trafficking children in the back of this
child
pizza restaurant.
Child prostitution ring, I think. And it was fake news.
And it was, yeah. Again, you know, the instance of knowing the source and checking this out and checking out the material that you know, I've always been, you know, your gut is a tremendous filter. And if your gut tells you there's something wrong with it, you know, chances are, you know, there may be something wrong with it.
This is a really good question that Nick sent in. He asks, was the press conference with Colin Powell about weapons of mass destruction fake news?
Wow.
John Evans.
Oh, I'm trying to...
I mean, the way I think about this, just as a journalist, this is journalists were covering the press conference, and he was an official spokesperson at that point for the federal government.
You know, I'm trying to recall everything that went down and everything that was said, but you know, I mean, if he was, you know, intentionally giving out the wrong information, reporters at that news conference were reporting on the information they were given.
Right. They were reporting on what Colin Powell was telling
Correct.
Them.
Correct.
This is what he said.
So, in essence, they were doing their job. Now, whether the information was incorrect or correct, that is a different argument. But as far as what they were doing, they were not intentionally reporting misleading information. They may have received it in an unintentional way, but I don't believe that they went out intentionally to report that wrong information.
Right. It took a while to uncover
filter,
that.
Filter, right. Yes.
And there's also a difference, isn't there, in terms of turning a story for daily news. You know, Colin Powell was at a press conference today. This is what he said.
Yes.
Versus an investigative story. Is what Colin Powell said accurate?
Right.
I mean, Colin Powell is a legitimate, trusted source. There was no reason to believe that he was giving out fake information. So I think that the journalists were doing their due diligence of getting information from an official, you know, respected source. So there was no harm in repeating that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I think of fake news, it's when the journalist, and I use that term very lightly when it comes to fake news, when the writer doesn't consult an official source and just makes stuff up. in an attempt to deliberately mislead people or take information from actual sources out of context to therefore mislead people to think a certain thing. That to me is fake news. When you go to a legitimate source and whether they're intentionally or unintentionally giving out false information, simply repeating that information, I don't think that really qualifies as fake news.
Nikki writes, many don't trust traditional media outlets because they feel they're beholden to corporate owners. So looking toward non-traditional outlets has become a way for people to try to find information that isn't corporate controlled. Clearly, we need news organizations that are free from corporate interests and control. It would be nice to hear from some female or people of color news people on your show instead of two white males. Thanks for that, Nikki. There is a serious lack of trust that has evolved between the general public and traditional news organizations. Is it just because of corporate interests? John Evans?
I think there's probably, you can hear in the email that there obviously is some distrust with this person in, you know, whether GE was having an impact on NBC or Disney was having an impact on ABC or ESPN. And, you know, all I can tell you is, you know, NBC, the network, has never had any impact on what we cover at WECT. And you know, they've never come in and said anything, and we're not even affiliated with the owners of NBC and or CNN, since we're a CNN affiliate. We don't hear from them. So to have an impact on what we do on a local level, there is none as far as the network is concerned.
So some of the other ways that fake news travels around. This is from the Globe and Mail. For-profit hoax sites, we've talked about that. Those are the things at the bottom of an article that you might read that say, John, what is...
You'll never believe what David Hasselhoff looks like now. Yes, exactly. Those kind of things, yes.
Then there's also biased state media or propaganda, which is what we often hear coming out of Russia, state-sponsored propaganda. And then there's disinformation through hacking legitimate social media accounts. Dave Purnell, is that something that comes up in your classes?
Not tremendously, because I honestly try not to focus too much on social media, because it can be a place of so much misinformation and so much opinion presented as fact. So I warn them about social media. I tell them that social media, you know, Facebook is not a good source. Twitter is not a good source. It's a great starting point. You want to know what people are talking about? Go to Twitter. Go on Facebook. See what they're talking about. But then use that as a jumping off point.
Well, in light of that, do you think that the responsibility of organizations like Facebook and Google, has that changed? Because, you know, up until very recently, those organizations just sort of stood back and let things flow through. Do they need to become more responsible gatekeepers?
Well, I think you've seen some of the owners and some of the high-level executives say that they are hiring ombudsmen, or they are hiring people to be more in tune to what is being posted, whether it's of a threatening nature, whether it's being something of a terrorist threat or whatever it is. But, you know, they are out there to be a free flow of ideas. That's basically what these sites were brought to do. Now, whether people have taken them and turned them into for-profit ventures and hacked into this and hacked into that, that's the bad part of them. But, you know, they are, I don't know how much responsibility they have. I think when it comes to people's safety and personal safety, I think there needs to be. But, you know, they're out there to be a free flow of ideas. And it's those of us who are consuming those ideas and beliefs is where a lot of the responsibility lies, in my mind.
And another source of fake news, this has happened with legitimate news organizations picking up hoax videos that have gone viral. I think of when there was an actual plane crash that happened
San Francisco
in the West Coast, yes, and some information about that crash. The crash itself was not a hoax,
right?
And then there was a hoax video of a golden eagle flying through a park, and swooping down and picking up a toddler in his talons and flying off. Mm-hmm. And it turned out, and news organizations picked up this video saying a golden eagle picked up a kid and dropped him and flew off. And it was a product of animation students in Montreal. It was mm-hmm. completely photoshopped, completely fake. John Evans, how do you
Where you have to, and we do on a daily basis with videos that we get in or information that comes in. That's where you have to take that step back and check and confirm and make sure you look for a second and a third source and look for the where this came out to confirm the legitimacy of the information. And, you know, that's what David is teaching the students that are coming out, is that you don't take something like that at face value. You have to get that second and third source and confirm this material, whether it be video or phone calls or emails or whatever you get.
And I promised that we would go back to the idea of minimizing harm. And this is something, Dave Purnell, you say you teach in your classes, and it's part of basic journalistic ethics. But how does that come into play when we're talking about sensationalizing news for the purpose of clickbait? Or how do you teach that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I preach not to subscribe to clickbait, because that's basically what is that. Clickbait exists to make money. It's to, you know, people advertise on your site. You want to get your, you know, sensational headlines out there so people will click. The more clicks you get, the more you can charge for advertising dollars. You know, there is a, you know, sometimes a thin line between a creative headline and sensationalism, and you have to be responsible in the way that you word those kinds of things. But your job is to serve the public. If you are a journalist, your job, yes, the owners of the station sign your check, but your obligation is to the public and keeping them well informed so they can make smart decisions. So you always have to keep that in the back of your mind. Journalism is a very challenging, difficult job. I think a lot of people don't really give journalists enough credit for how hard they work and what a sacrifice it is, because it is a job that's, I mean, it really takes a lot of your time and effort, and you really live that job. But you're also on a deadline. You know, you've got to get that story in by 5 o'clock. You've got to get this interview done before this time so you can go out and shoot your video and edit all, you know, edit everything together. So you have to balance responsible journalism with meeting that deadline. And that can sometimes, the end result is you don't report as responsibly as you would like. So you always have to keep in the back of your mind the people out there, the people you're reporting on, the people you're reporting about, the people you're reporting for. Those are the people that you owe everything that you're doing to. Mm-hmm.
There are a large number of reputable news organizations that have published stories about fake news, and they've put out fake news quizzes. Can you tell the difference? And here's how to learn. So in the last few minutes that we have, let's talk specifically about people who are not journalists, what they can look for when they're reading an article to determine whether or not something is legitimate. And both of you have mentioned just looking at the source of the article. There are so many organizations out there now that are publishing. Everybody has a voice. Anybody can publish. NPR's All Tech Considered actually offered a few tips, including pay attention to the domain and URL. For example, abcnews.com is a legitimate source, but abcnews.com.co is not. John Evans, have you ever run across that when you've seen a little something that looks a little hinky in the URL and you go,
real? Yeah, emails, we get, you know, I get how many emails into my inbox and my clutter and my junk every day. And, you know, you have to look at, you know, if you get an email that comes from somebody, you know, cityofwilmington.com or so-and-so at, you know, nhrmc.org, then you can believe that that's fairly legitimate. But if it's something else with a .co and the name is not in the address, yeah, pay attention to that, because that's a good telltale sign that it's not legit.
And that's this edition of Coastline. We're going to post some of those other tips on our website at whqr.org. John Evans, Dave Purnell, thank you both so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure, Rachel. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.